Welcome to the TBD podcast, To Be Determined. My name is Erica Berger, and I'm your host and convener. Life can be messy. On To Be Determined, we talk with artists, entrepreneurs, and world shapers about how they pick through their messes and become more resilient. We hope you'll laugh, maybe take some notes, and leave thinking more deeply about your life and how you aim to live it. As our guests reflect vulnerably on their journeys, we hope their stories will help you better explore yours. After all, shouldn't life be determined? This week on TBD, I chatted with Nick Gray. I met Nick back in 2010 at a friend's party where his smile and demeanor lit up a corner of the room. I think that energy comes from Nick's curiosity and unique view of the world. His most recent success, a company called Museum Hack, has transformed the way we experience museums. But that's not where Nick started his career. Nick originally worked for The Family Business, a company that specializes in in-flight entertainment technology and that was recently sold to a private equity firm. While working there in sales and marketing, Nick had tinkered around giving free museum tours. That's how he founded Museum Hack, a company that puts an alternative spin on museums. It transforms museums from an intimidating Vegas buffet into a fun, curated tasting menu. I had this conversation with Nick a few months ago. I was in New York getting ready to make a move to LA. I got to his West Village apartment pretty early in the morning on a Saturday. Immediately, he greeted me with a hug and a big smile. But then he ran to the corner, popped his iPhone into a tripod atop the mantel, and turned on his Instagram stories, or maybe it was Snapchat. He then said, "Erica, say hey. We're here recording a podcast today." You might imagine my face as I realized he was recording us on video. You know the saying, you've got a face for radio. But it made sense. He's always got an audience. When we finally sat down, we started chatting about my pending move and about the differences between New York and Los Angeles. One big difference that came up was privacy. In New York, you're always surrounded by people. The subway, the streets, the buses, and most people can't afford to live alone. But in LA, you're in a car by yourself fairly often.
Right, you can sing out loud. I noticed that when I first moved to New York, there was never an opportunity to sing out loud like I used to do in my car.
Yeah, except for like in your shower, right?
Right, right. So, but even then, it's not private because you have roommates who can hear you, the neighbors, right? If I sang here, my neighbors could hear me.
True. Besides the privacy of singing in the shower or the car, I wanted to talk to Nick because I wanted to learn why and how he started Museum Hack. Most of all, I wanted to learn what drives him and how he gets through his day. Before all that, though, I wanted to ask him something simple. What's he grateful for? Yeah, so tell me about the things that you feel privileged to have or experiences that you've had as an adult that really have informed how you choose to live your life.
I feel privileged to have a nice apartment. We sold our business about 3 years ago to a private equity firm, and that has allowed me to live in a nicer space than working with museums would normally allow. And I like that. It was a significant step for me to say I'm going to live by myself. I'm going to move out of Williamsburg and have roommates. I had an awesome big loft space with a lot of roommates, and it was great. But now for me, this kind of is like my little nest, and I come home and I love to just read, and I don't know, maybe I'm just getting like really old and boring, but I like just kind of chilling home, kind of like sort of a homebody. Past few weeks on this new diet, I've been cooking almost every single meal at home. And so I like that. I feel very thankful to have that opportunity. I think something else that most people don't have is I have an interestingly close relationship with my parents that came about from working together. I didn't have a close relationship with them in high school and in college. And in fact, I love them very, very much now and today, but I think I went to college and I was kind of like, all right, like that's kind of the end of like my relationship with my parents. I'm going on to start my life. And by working together, it really forced a closeness that is pretty interesting that I see as unique. It's certainly unique to be that close to my parents. And then the last thing I'm really thankful for that I think is a privilege is working with Museum Hack. I get to work with stand-up comedians and actors and Broadway performers and educators, people that are so talented and creative in ways that I'm not, that it really blows my mind. And I'm constantly amazed in working with them.
So tell our audience a little bit more about Museum Hack so they have some context for the comment that you just made.
Sure. Museum Hack started doing these renegade museum tours at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Huge museum, very overwhelming. It got over 7 million visitors last year. For me, though, that place in New York City was always a tourist attraction. Not a place you'd really go with your friends. I didn't have a deep relationship with it. And then everything changed. I went there. This woman brought me there on a romantic date and gave me this tour where she walked me around and just showed me things. You know, she talked to me at my level, not like at a fancy sort of art history. And I looked around the space and I was like, shit, I think I moved to New York to hang out at places like this, right? To be in a big city, to be in spaces like this. And I started going back there again and again. And I liked it so much that I started to do these tours for my friends just to show them cool stuff I found. I've never taken an art history class, so it wasn't like a sophisticated tour. Just like 10 cool things I found and 3 things I want to steal. Very fast-paced. And it got to be really cool, I guess. Folks liked it, and they shared it then with their friends. And about three or 4 years ago, we started to charge for the tours, turned it into a business, what was a labor of love. Now today is a big deal.
I remember I was on, I think, one of the early free tours.
Probably one of the very first, yeah. One of the free tours when it was like a true labor of love. What do you remember?
I am a total museum nerd. I love going to museums. Mm. But I'd never thought about it in the way that you positioned it, which was, you know, we go to museums and we try to see everything. Mm. And it's the same as going to a gourmet restaurant mm-hmm. and trying to eat everything off the menu.
Yeah.
And you position Museum Hack and your tours as a tasting menu.
Mm-hmm.
And that made so much sense to me because it allowed us to go deeper on some pieces that, you know, I'd stop and stare at for like 30 seconds maybe and not really understand the context.
Yeah.
So that was so fun to me. And then kind of the element of surprise at the end and just the notion of play, like adult play.
Yes.
I think you really started Museum Hack before a lot of people were talking about the value of adult play or before it became more of a mainstream conversation. Now I'm seeing folks like the founder of Maker Faire write a book about play and Jen Sander start a studio called Play Atelier, and she's the global innovation director for Burning Man and just kind of even like IDEOs and the Frog Designs talk about play and how do we incorporate play into our work and what's the value of that. And I think you kind of hit on that in a serious setting earlier than a lot of people.
I like that idea. Play in the museum. Whatever we can do to make it fun, that's my goal.
Yeah, because I think, you know, people come to New York and the Met is, like you said, so incredibly overwhelming.
Mm.
And you can just stay in Central Park and not even go
right,
in.
Right, right.
Or you can go to the Museum of Natural History, which is another favorite of mine.
Yeah.
But yeah, positioning the way that you experience a place as something that you choose instead of just a given
right.
is so interesting. I think it could apply to so many other things.
I like that.
But tell me kind of now that you've been building this business for 3+ years and you get to work with the creatives you mentioned who I'm guessing are now the tour guides, which is so cool. You're employing creatives and giving them other means of work, which is so interesting to me.
Heck yeah.
My roommate's a musician. My other roommate's a drag queen.
Nice.
And they both have other jobs, right? It's like a multiple gig economy.
Mm-hmm.
But what have you learned in the last few years, more on a personal level, less on a professional level, but like personally, what have you had to kind of build into your life in order to continue running this business?
I'd say the biggest thing I learned was that as a CEO, there's a fallacy of adding too much value. And that oftentimes, especially in those individuals who have a tendency to micromanage, we can think that we can make an idea 10 or 15% better, and yet it removes 50% of the enthusiasm from the individual leading that. And so I could tell one of the tour guides how to tweak their piece to make it pop a little bit, but just by doing that, it's going to remove all of their enthusiasm and all their ownership of like, this is my piece. And so that's been the hardest thing for me is just learning to shut up. And like, even if things can be better with my input, that doesn't mean that it's right. So that's been a huge part.
It sounds like a little bit of a lesson about control. and attachment and non-attachment.
Maybe giving up control a little, yeah.
Right? And it's interesting because when you give up a little bit of control, especially creative control, it creates space for new ideas.
Yeah.
But it's hard to do in the in the meantime.
Yeah. Certainly hard to do. That's one thing that I learned. I've learned about, I don't know, we've certainly made a lot of mistakes along the way. We're a large-ish organization now, and we're growing. We're in a lot more cities. We're in San Francisco, Los Angeles, Chicago, Washington, D.C. And I think one thing I've learned that I've been decently successful at, if I could say, is by hiring the best people and then kind of getting out of their way. And so this is all along that line or that theme of relinquishing control. So we are ridiculously obsessed with our recruiting process and how we hire. I'd say I actually don't like to work with friends, people that I know beforehand, because of the biases that I have inherently about working with them. And so we try to cast as wide a net as possible. Oftentimes we'll have hundreds of applicants just for one job. And we've built a system and a process that I think has allowed us to really hire the best people.
That's super interesting. It never even occurred to me that you'd have to be so deliberate about that, but it makes all of the sense now in thinking about it. The tour guides make or break the experience.
Yeah, totally. Oh my gosh, we have some amazing guides.
So tell me, you hit on a little bit of this notion that you need to relinquish control. How are you cultivating your leadership skills? How are you kind of becoming an embodied leader of both an organization, but also just your own life?
One thing I did was I made a big investment to join a CEO leadership group that's called the Strategic Coach. They're based out of Toronto. It's a massive investment, just like moving into my apartment. I was very scared to make it. I deliberated. I lost sleep over it. And it's turned out to be a really good investment. One, for the peer group, being surrounded by other entrepreneurs who have dozens of employees each and deal with the human resource issues. And two, it's helped me to effectively delegate and to manage my time a lot better and learn what I'm really good at. And, you know, if there's a listener who's listening about, if they wanted one trick or kind of piece of advice that I've learned from this, it's that I completely changed how I do my schedule. And I used to schedule meetings anytime during the whole week. If I have a spot available, now I'd do it. I now block my meeting days. I only take meetings on 3 days of the week. And I leave 2 days as free as I possibly can to work on, you know, things that'll grow the business. So generally my Wednesdays and Thursdays, I try to have no meetings at all, even internal meetings. And I try to focus that on some business growth. That's really been helpful for me, gives a sense of renewal. And I know it's easy to say that, but being in this group surrounded by others who are doing it, constantly reminded about it, has helped for me to really make it a habit.
Cool. On a personal level, what are you doing in regards to habits when you come home or in the mornings that make you feel more ready to build what you're building or live the life that you're living?
Heck yeah. I do not wake up with an alarm clock. I guess that's something I should be grateful or thankful for. And so my body naturally wakes up between, you know, 6 and 7 o'clock in the morning. And usually the very first thing that I do is I have a cup of water with salt in it to replenish the electrolytes. I've heard that salt helps with adrenal fatigue. And as someone who's a lifelong abuser of caffeine, that certainly helps. So I have some salt water when I wake up.
How much salt is in it?
I would say I put in 1/4 teaspoon or 1/2 teaspoon. So
cool.
Not too much, right? And the salt that I actually use is a light salt. So there's half the sodium is regular salt, but it has other things like potassium that are very necessary, especially on this weird diet that I'm doing. And then at nighttime, I have a sleep playlist that I'll play as I'm getting ready for bed. It's just a droney type album by this guy, Max Richter, I think. And I say to my robot to play it, and it just sets the mood and the atmosphere that, okay, I'm getting ready for bed now. Like, now's time to start to shut off. So I try to do that, and I also lay on one of those acupressure mats more often than not for about 5 to 10 minutes before I get in bed.
Cool. I didn't realize you had these rituals. That's interesting. How did you find them?
I'm really interested in sleep, and I'm interested in managing your energy levels more so than your time. because I can have 14 free hours a day, but if I'm strung out for half of those, and if I don't feel renewed and focused, then what's the point of having more time? And so that was a hugely influential book for me. It was a book that I read in college called The Power of Full Engagement. It talked about how important it is to manage your time. Sleep is an important renewal system and a process, and I'm always interested in ways to optimize it, to sleep better, to really wake up recharged and ready to go. So anything I can do, I'm always looking for an edge. Right now I'm taking a magnesium supplement before I go to sleep. It's called Natural Calm or something. It's supposed to be nice.
Yeah, I know that magnesium is especially good for urban dwellers because a lot of the food that we eat doesn't have as much as it would had we lived in the countryside or were growing our own food or what have you. I grew up in a house where we had magnesium water.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. My mom had some food sensitivities, and so I had a very experimental food childhood.
That's cool.
Tell me a little bit about your diet, if you're comfortable talking about that.
Sure, yes. Now I'm doing a ketogenic diet, put my body into nutritional ketosis. Keto diet is all the rave. A lot of people have probably heard about it. Essentially, it changes your body from burning glucose or glycogen, which is sugar and carbs, to deriving its energy off of fat. So if you think about bread or Cheetos or pretzels or pasta or rice, anything like that gets turned into sugar, to glucose or glycogen, and your body uses that to generate a form of energy. This type of ketogenic diet was originally made in the 1950s for kids who had epilepsy, and they found that it almost cured it across the board, and it can also take somebody out of diabetes type 2 within a couple weeks, cures the type 2 diabetes. I'm interested in it for the focus and performance enhancing and also to lower inflammation. I've had some dry skin over the last couple years that I'm trying to cure holistically. So I'm doing this as a test. And I've experimented with some things like the Whole30 diet, which I really loved. I love that Whole30 diet. And now I'm on this one.
Whole30 is really intense, right?
Whole30 is rather intense. It's less intense than the ketogenic diet.
Okay.
But Whole30, great way to do it, to learn about it, is there's a book called It Starts With Food. Mm. And me and a former girlfriend did it kind of both at the same time. It was so helpful to have somebody else do it. And it was great. I never slept better. I had the best skin I've ever had. It was a really good diet.
Interesting. Okay. So is there anything else that you... Knowing that our listeners are very keen on habits and understanding how to live a good life and discover the things that make them want to kind of get out of bed every day, is there any last kind of comments you want to make about things that you've discovered, hobbies, skills, rituals, before I let you go?
When we think about hiring people at Museum Hack, I think you could apply this to your own life. And we think about A players. I want to be surrounded by A players in my life. And I'm extremely careful with my time as far as being surrounded by those types of individuals. And an A player is really defined by three things. And you can think about this for yourself in your own work, in your job, in your career. An A player is the right person in the right place within the business, getting paid the right price. Once again, it's the right person in the right place in the business getting paid the right price. I could theoretically be making hamburgers at a restaurant, and if they were paying me $250,000 a year, that is a great job for me. And that could be fantastic. And the idea that everybody has to be having the best job at the best pay, you know, I think that for some people who are not entrepreneurs, who say, you know what, I don't want to make my own life, I'm okay to take a salary, that if you look at those three things and you're able to say, I'm okay with it, I think I'm in the right place, that could give you the self-satisfaction or the confidence to go about your role. For myself, I like those three things, and what wakes me up every morning is the opportunity to find and work with other type of A players to reimagine the adult museum experience. We think that there's so many more people out there that are not like you, Erica. You love museums. You love art. But that's an abnormality. I think most of my friends, that, you know, maybe I hang out with a bunch of degenerates, but most of them don't like museums, and they don't go to museums more often than they go to their local bars, right? Mm. How do we get museums to be the place that people really hang out at and get inspired by history and storytelling?
I think you have to allow people to talk in museums. Have you ever thought about how you have to be so quiet when you're walking around, especially like in MoMA?
Mm.
You know, if you're talking, it's like this, how dare you disturb my experience? And I was just thinking about that when you said that, like you go to a bar and you can talk, right?
Yeah.
And you can eat and
yeah.
drink. And
yeah.
in a museum, it feels like you're tiptoeing around. And it's almost like you're in trouble. It's like the level before feeling like you're in trouble.
It is. It's like right on the cusp, right?
Yeah, which is why Museum Hack is so great, because you actually get to chat with people. So it's so like making museums social and just allowing people to have different experiences.
Mm.
It's super inspiring.
I'm obsessed with that. I think museums are great. I hope more people go to them more often.
Cool. Well, thank you, Nick. It was so great having you.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. Thanks again to Nick. I love the idea of A players. Am I the right person working in the right place at the right price? If you want to learn more about Nick Gray's work, you can visit museumhack.com. This has been a production of TBD, To Be Determined. If you love us, please share us with your friends. We love reaching new audiences. You can also check us out at livetbd.com. That's live to be determined. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.